Okay, we're going to play a little game. And it's called Where is Worship? Or a bit like Where's Wally, but Where's Worship? Which one of these pictures, how many of them are of worship happening? We're going to click? No. We'll just wait a little minute because sometimes it is a bit slow. There we go. Canterbury Cathedral. I think the clicker might not be working. A Coldplay concert. The pilgrimage of the Hajj pilgrimage to Mecca. A familiar shopping centre. Big football match. The London Stock Exchange. Watching TV. Which ones are of people worshipping? Oh, it was a trick question. Yeah, you're right. All of them. All of them. They're all pictures of people worshipping. Worship means to bow down. Oh, we've got what next slide. And there are four ways of understanding what worshipping is. Worshipping is to bow down to something. Worshipping means to obey. Worship. So what you worship controls your choices. Worship means to trust. You trust something to help you, to bless you, to fulfill you, and to protect you. And worship means to serve, to give your time and your energy and your resources to something. That's worship. That's ways of understanding what worship is, those four things. And the Bible says that human beings are designed to be worshippers. Almost more than anything else, we're designed to be worshippers. We're created by God to worship Him, the one who made us. But the problem is, a bit like if you have a hose on full power and you let go of the hose and it just goes everywhere, shooting water everywhere, doesn't it? A bit like that. Since the fall, since Adam and Eve fell, humans have just worshipped everything, all sorts of other things, in all sorts of directions. And we just can't stop it. We can't stop worshipping, but we don't worship the right thing. We don't worship God Himself. So we worship other gods. We worship pop stars. We worship money. We worship holidays, relationships. And it's a complete disaster. The first of the Ten Commandments says this: I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. That's what God says. He demands that we only worship Him. And He does this because He loves us. It's not because He's selfish and He needs our worship to somehow build Him up. It's because worship is what we're made for, and that's how humans flourish, worshipping God. And any other gods which we worship will fail us and will be a burden to us. But all of us are tempted, aren't we, to worship all sorts of other things. Even, you know, Christians, just as much as non-Christians, are tempted to worship other things that are not the God of the Bible. We all worship all the time. The question isn't, do I worship? The question is, what or who do I worship? So will you just think, just for a minute now, what is it for you? What do you worship? I've just got some questions that can help you work out some of the things that you worship, some of the things that you're tempted to worship, that you tend to worship. So, when you're not thinking about anything else, what do you daydream about? What do you daydream about? What do you most easily spend your money on? Where does your money most naturally go for you? What is the goal that you are living for right now? What's the goal that you're living for? And what causes your most uncontrollable emotions? So what makes you really angry? What makes you really despairing? What makes you guilty? What makes you afraid? What do you tend to worship, I wonder? What do you worship? And it can be a good thing that you make into a God thing, it's worth saying. Now, the passage that we've heard read today so well by Beth and Maria from 1 Kings is all about the conflict between the true God and the false God. So I wonder if you remember back to last time when Louis was preaching about the previous chapter of 1 Kings, we heard about King Ahab, the bad king, boo kind of king. And King Ahab had led the people to worship pagan gods, and particularly this god Baal, the god of fertility and the harvest. And God could not stand it because Baal is not God. And worshipping Baal was having a terrible effect on all of the people, on the way they lived. And so he sent Elijah to declare a drought for 3 years. There was a drought. And after 3 years of showing how useless Baal is, because the god of the harvest can't even produce one rain cloud, God sends Elijah then again to Ahab for a showdown. And so Elijah, it's just before the reading that we heard today, he says to Ahab, "Assemble all of the people of Israel, from all over Israel, and meet me on Mount Carmel." So picture the scene. Everyone, all of Israel is collected. They're trekked up to the top of this mountain. It's quite a flat mountain. And they've trekked up to the top, and they're all crowded round, watching and waiting. What's going to happen? On one side, you've got 450 prophets of Baal, and also 400 prophets of the other false god, Asherah, who they were worshipping. This huge, intimidating group of prophets. And then on the other side, you've got one man, Elijah, all on his own, God's prophet. And he is isolated, he's weak, he is unimpressive. And he stands up and he issues this challenge. And this is such a powerful challenge, and we're going to come back to this. He says, "How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him." Do you have the next? And the next one. There we go. It's powerful, isn't it? You can only worship one God because they're completely opposed to each other. It's like if you live in Manchester, you can't support Man City and Man United, can you? If you try and wear both T-shirts, you'll just get beaten up by both sides. You can't do it. They're opposites. God and Baal are opposites. They are completely opposed to each other. You cannot have both. Whichever one is the real God, worship him, says Elijah. And how do the people react? Well, have a look at just the end of verse 21. The people said nothing. It's just silence. And I think we can imagine what question they're asking, can't we? How do we know? How do we know which one is the real God? So then we have the test. We heard it read out. First, 450 prophets of Baal, all of them, no doubt dressed up in all their finery and all their face paint, who knows what else. And they're prancing and they're dancing and they're shouting and they're wailing and they're screaming and they're calling on their god Baal for hours, from morning till midday. The hours go by and they get louder and more desperate and more frantic. And as midday passes, they begin to even slash themselves with swords to try and spill their blood so that their God will hear them and will answer. And they get louder and louder, and all the way until the evening, hours and hours of just crazy ritual, hours of calling out to their God. And in verse 29, there was no response. No one answered. No one paid attention. Because Baal is no God at all. Of course he can't answer. And then up steps Elijah. He builds his altar. He arranges the wood, cuts the bull up, puts it on, and he gets the people to pour loads of water all over it to make it completely soaked, completely drenched. It's dripping with water. And then he steps forward and he prays one prayer. Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and have done all these things at your command. Answer me, Lord. Answer me so that these people will know that you, Lord, are God, and that you are turning their hearts back again. And fire comes. The fire of the Lord falls and burns up everything. It burns up the sacrifice, it burns up the wood, it burns up the stones, it burns up the soil. All the water is just gone. It's astonishing power. Who is the real God? Who is the real God? Next slide. Or next. Who is the real God? The Lord. It's obvious. All the people have seen it. And so they fall down and worship, crying, "The Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God." They know now, don't they? They know. It's really clear. You can't escape who is God. It's the Lord. And so now they need to do two things. They need to reject Baal and they need to follow the Lord. That was Elijah's challenge. And do you know what? That's our challenge as well. That's the challenge of God to us this morning. We are called to do the same thing. How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if money, success, relationships, power, popularity, family, holidays, entertainment is God, follow that. Who is really God? Well, how do we know? How do we know who is really God? Well, the answer is that that same God who sent fire from heaven in 1 Kings, he became a human 2,000 years ago. Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." Jesus is God. So follow him. We have the next one. Jesus is God, so follow him. And how do we know that he is God? Because we need to be sure, don't we? Follow the real God. We know because he rose from the dead. The resurrection is the power of God supremely displayed. It's the fire from heaven is nothing compared to the resurrection. The resurrection of Jesus from the dead, never to die again. It is the display that he can do anything he says he will do. That is the sign for us. I believe it. Do you believe it? Do you believe that the resurrection is true? Because that's what really matters. If the resurrection is true, Jesus is the real God. Because no one else and nothing else can do that, can raise the dead. Jesus is the real God, so follow him. But then what if we're like the people of Israel and we are wavering between the real God, Jesus, and other things? So we want to follow Jesus, but we just find other things so tempting to trust and obey and serve and bow down to. We need to know that they are just like Baal. They cannot hear, they cannot answer, and they cannot save us. And I just want to give two examples this morning. And the first is entertainment. Entertainment is not God. And it's so easy, isn't it, to just blob out in front of the TV or a video game and just be swept into a world that seems to be so much more real and enjoyable than the one that is true. But it can't fulfill you. We think it will make us so happy, so we give our time to it, don't we? We spend hours watching stuff. We spend our money on TVs and on Netflix, and we put the TV in the centre of the room, don't we? It's like an idol, like a shrine. We put it in the centre of the room. And I'm not saying that watching TV is wrong, but worshipping entertainment is. And it cannot hear us. It cannot act, and it cannot save us. And the second example is Christmas. Isn't it so easy to make Christmas into the God instead of Jesus and forget that Christmas is all about him? We spend so much money on all the things, all the presents and the food, and we spend so much time decorating and preparing and getting everything ready, and we look forward to all the celebrating and the family and the consuming, and we pin our hopes on Christmas this year being wonderful. Christmas is going to make us happy. But Christmas can't hear you. Christmas can't act. Christmas can't save. And if you pin your hopes on Christmas, you will be bitterly disappointed, I'm afraid, because it can't live up to your hope. Christmas can't, but Jesus can. God has heard us in our need. God has acted by sending his son Jesus to become a baby. God has saved us through Jesus' death and resurrection. Jesus is worth celebrating. And he's worth obeying and enjoying. He is worth serving and trusting. Worship him this Christmas. You can worship him because he's died for you and been raised. So will you worship him this Christmas? And I really want to encourage you to try to help others to do the same, to worship Jesus, perhaps for the first time this Christmas. So firstly, will you pray? As we come into the Christmas season, will you pray for us as we preach and as we lead carol services and all these extra events? Pray that we will proclaim Jesus Christ really clearly and powerfully. And will you pray for your friends and your family that they will come and listen too? And then secondly, will you invite your friends and your family to one of the carol services? Louis held up lots of cards. There are lots to deliver as we post them through letters. But I heard a really helpful piece of advice, as well as that, a really helpful piece of advice about inviting people. And that is, when you have a friend or a family member who you want to invite, put yourself in the invitation. So say something like, I'm going to the carol service on Sunday. It would mean a lot to me if you came with me. Would you like to come? So put yourself in the invitation and then bring your friend or your family member to the event. So bring them to the event. Maybe invite them to your house for a mince pie first and then bring them along. So then they won't have to worry about sitting next to someone they don't know or finding a seat or anything like that. Put yourself in the invitation and bring them to the event. It'd be wonderful, wouldn't it, if we could help other people worship Jesus this Christmas and not Christmas itself. Entertainment isn't God. Christmas isn't God. Know this morning that Jesus is God. And follow him alone. Let me pray.